Parak Gimel. You're off the Parak Gimel. Parak Gimel begins. Achar Dvarim Ba'ile. Page 1254. Parak Gimel begins. Achar Dvarim Ba'ile. Gidal Melech Chashrish Es Haman. So the Gemara in Megillah tells us that Kodesh Baruch Hu is always makdim refuah lamaka. Kodesh Baruch Hu always brings the refuah, the cure before the maka, before whatever bad is going to happen to the Jews. And before Haman came to power, Kodesh Baruch Hu made sure that Esther will be the queen, and as we're going to see later, she was the one who took care of this this decree against the Jews. Now, it's very interesting to note, the Gemara says that, at least according to one day in the Gemara, Esther was an HSE, she was married to Mordechai. And yet, it seemed that no one knew that. It was like a certain cloud came down on people's memory, and no one knew who Esther was, even according to the other opinion, where she was not married to Mordechai, she was still one of the most beautiful women alive. And yet no one knew exactly where she was, where she came from, her lineage. And that's why Achashverosh, as we saw before, asked her where she came from. But no one seemed to know anything about her. That was part of the nais, says the Gra, to make sure that when she ends up trying to fight against this Xera, no one knew that she was actually Jewish. And this is all part of the nais. Again, as we mentioned, Megillas Esther is on the plan of the words Hester. Everything is hidden. So we don't see the Nisim upright, but this was, again, part of the Nais. So, after the Gidal HaMelech HaChashverosh HaSamon Ben Amdasa HaGogi V'Nes'ehu V'Yosem Eskisa Me'al Kol HaSarim Asher Itay. Now, Haman did not start off as the highest advisor to the king. He actually started off as one of the lowest advisors to the king. But, because HaChashverosh received his advice of killing Vashti, and he was very happy about getting old and getting rid of the old and having the new, yet he was very happy with Esther. That's why, and also another reason, Haman was extremely wealthy. He was one of the people who found Nebuchadnezzar's wealth, which he hid along the Har Pras. And Achashverosh was very enamored by this wealth. That's why he ended up rising Haman into power. Now, it's interesting to note that even though Haman's advice was very poor advice, as we mentioned previously, because the reason that Achashverosh ended up marrying Vashti was because previously he had a war with Bavel. Parasimada went to war with Bavel, and they wiped out the whole family, the whole royal family of Bavel, and the only princess that was left alive was Vashti. Now, Achashverosh knew that among his kingdom were still people who were loyal to the old king, Belshazzar, the king of Bavel. And he wanted to make sure that these people will now be loyal to him instead. And so that's why he went ahead and married Vashti, to show these people that he's really also joining in the royal family to, you know, to Parasumodai. And this was all part of a political coup in solidifying his monarchy. And so when Haman went ahead and advised Achashverosh to kill her, that was actually very poor advice. But yet, that was, again, part of the nais, that he accepted the advice of Haman, ended up killing Vashti, and married Esther. So even though it was very poor advice, he considered that to be very good advice, and he was raising Haman into power. Now, the pasuk is very clear in terms of the lineage of Haman. It's Haman ben Amdasa HaGogi, who came all the way from Agog. The Navi tells us that many years before, Shaul was ordered by HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Shmuel was sent to Shaul to tell him to kill out Amalek. And the army of Shaul, during the battle, they didn't want to kill out the livestock, and they kept the livestock alive, all the sheep and goats, and in addition, they also kept Agog, the king of Amalek. And Shmuel received a prophecy from HaKadosh Baruch Hu telling him that, Shaul, you didn't listen to me. And Shmuel was told to go ahead and kill Agag. So the next day, we actually literally cut Haman and Agag into pieces. That was already too late, because that night, Agag was with a woman, and the woman became pregnant. And from that child came out all the rest of the generations of Amalek. And only thanks to Shaul do we have Haman alive today, and in the Megillah. So we see that Haman is in a direct line all the way to Agag, the king of Amalek. Pasuk Beis. Chol Abdi Amalek Asher B'Shar Amalek Korim U'Mishtachavim L'Haman. The order of the king was that all of the slaves that work in the palace have to bow down to Haman. Kiken Tivah Lo Hamalech U'Mordechai Leicher V'Leishtachave. And actually, everywhere Haman went, people were bowing down to him. As he was walking the streets of Shushan, people were bowing down to him. However, Mordechai lo yichra v'lo yishtachave. Now, it's a machlekes why exactly Mordechai was not willing to bow down to Haman. Rashi brings down the pasuk pshat that's brought in the Gemara, that Haman was either wearing an avodah zarah on him, or he made himself into an avodah zarah. And that's why Mordechai didn't want to bow down to him, because it's offered to bow down to any avodah zarah. But the Megillas Astarim learns that really Mordechai should have bowed down to Haman. There was no reason why he should not have bowed down to Haman. And because of Mordechai, the whole decree against the Jews ended up unfolding. And so Mordechai was really the core reason for this decree against the Jews, as we're going to see in a minute. And the Megillas Astarim quotes Ramban and Yeshayah that sometimes the Kodesh Baruch Hu will take the free will away from a tzaddik and make him do something that seems to be not right. And when Mordechai did not agree to bow down to Haman, that was really Hashem as if taking away his free will, his bechira, and making sure that he will not bow down to cause this decree to come about. And as we mentioned, okay, we'll see this in a minute. Pasuk Gimel, Ve'yemru Avdi HaMelech Asher B'Shar HaMelech, L'Mordechai, Madu'a To'ever Es Mitzvas HaMelech. These slaves that are sitting in B'Shar HaMelech at the gate of in the palace are telling Mordechai, why don't you bow down, why don't you listen to Mitzvas HaMelech? Now, as we mentioned before, we saw that nowhere in the Megillah does it mention Hashem's name. And every time it says HaMelech, it's referring to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. When it says HaMelech HaChashverosh, it's referring to HaChashverosh. But anytime it says HaMelech by itself, it's referring to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And so over here, it doesn't really make sense. It was HaChashverosh who decreed that everyone should bow down to Haman. So why are they telling Mordechai, Ato'er es mitzvah HaMelech? You're not listening to the mitzvah of the Melech, referring to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So again, this goes back with the pshat of the Megillas Astarim, that really Mordechai should have been bowing down to Haman, because there is mitzvah the Melech, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, there's no reason why you should not bow down. In fact, it's causing danger to the Jews. But Hashem took away his bechira and made him do something wrong, kevyochol, so to speak. Pasuk Dalet, they're telling him day after day, and he would not listen to them. They had to tell Haman that Mordechai was not bowing down to him. Says the Gra something very interesting, that it's very weird that Haman did not notice. They had to actually tell him that Mordechai was not bowing down to him. Mordechai was a very important person in Shushan. As we saw previously, he was an advisor to the king and one of the biggest enemies of Haman. And yet Haman did not notice that Mordechai was bowing down to him. Explains the Gra, this is an amazing illustration of human character. Because Haman was so self-involved in his own glory and honor, he did not notice that Mordechai was not bowing down to him. He was so focused on everyone else giving him kavod that he could not see his arch enemy refusing to bow down to him. That's why they had to actually tell him that Mordechai, they had to bring to his attention that Mordechai was not willing to bow down to him. Haman actually tested Mordechai. He went close to him to see if he would not bow down to him. So he went closer and closer, and he noticed that Mordechai deliberately is refusing to bow down to him. Vayimala Haman chima. Haman was filled with rage. Now the Gemara tells us that there was actually a little more in the background. This is all in year 12 to Achashverosh's rulership. And a few years before, Achashverosh had a rebellion in the provinces now known as the area of India. And he sent two generals with 6,000 soldiers each to go ahead and handle this rebellion. Those two generals were Haman and Mordechai. Now, Achashverosh sent each one of them with enough food and water to last for 3 years. And they went out to battle. And Haman was very not careful. He was not frugal with his supplies. So after 1 year, he completely ran out. And he came over to Mordechai. Mordechai was attacking from the west. And they both attacked from different sides. And he came over to Mordechai and told him, "Listen, I'm out of food and water. You know, can you please help me?" And Mordechai refused. He said, "No, I'm not going to help you." And Haman went back to his camp. And apparently they had a little bit left to eat and drink. But after a while, he went back to Mordechai and said, "Please, I need you to help me. Otherwise, me and all my soldiers are going to starve to death." And Mordechai told him, "I agree to help you on one condition, that you become a slave to me forever." And now Mordechai was very frugal with his supplies, and in fact he had not only enough for himself, but he had enough to share. But he refused in the beginning to share because he wanted to make sure that this anti-Semite Haman would be an evet to him. And so they took that, some kind of foot protection that when they used to go out into war, that was made out of leather, and he took that off, and he wrote in the inside of this foot protection that this contract that Haman will now be a slave to Mordechai. And every time Haman would walk in the streets of Shushan with everyone bowing down to him, Mordechai would hold up this contract showing that Haman was actually a slave to him, to Mordechai. And that's what filled Haman with rage. Pasuk Vav. Vayivas be'einav lishlach yad Mordechai levadai. It was too lowly in his eyes to kill Mordechai himself. Ki gidu lo yis'am Mordechai. The Mefarshim explained, Am Mordechai, he knew exactly that Mordechai was Jewish. So Am Mordechai is actually referring to the Sanhedrin. He wanted to kill out the whole Sanhedrin, and in addition to the Jews. Even though the Sanhedrin, as we saw before, were held as advisors to the king. In Pasuk Aleph, in Parak Aleph, where Achashverosh consults Achachamim Yoidei Ha'itim, the Gemara says that's referring to the Sanhedrin, who know to be Ma'abar, the Shana, they know exactly when to make a leap year. That's Chachamim Yoidei Ha'itim. So he consulted them actually first, before he went to his advisors. Even though Achashverosh himself was a Gantzvayin anti-Semite, as Rashi points out, who Berisha Mitchilasa Ba'at Soifai, still the Chachamim were the ones who were consulted. And Haman wanted to kill the Sanhedrin as well. That's Am Mordechai. The Yevakash Haman Lashmin Niskol Yehudim wanted to destroy, to eliminate all the Yehudim, Asher B'chol Malchus Achashverosh Am Mordechai, who were in all the countries under the ruling of Achashverosh. Pasuk Zayin, B'chodesh HaRishon Hu Chodesh Nisan, Mishnas 12 L'melech Achashverosh, this is the 12th year of Achashverosh being king. People poor who had gaira lifnei Haman b'yoyim liyoyim mechodesh lechodesh shniyamaser mechodesh adar. Now it seems like some kind of silly way of deciding when exactly to kill the Jews, but in fact those days this was a way of tapping into this kind of dark magic of knowing exactly when the best time is to destroy the Jews, and as we're going to see later, this was not Haman himself who made this poor. It was his son, Shimshi, the scribe, who made this poor. We're gonna refer back to this later. Pasuk Ches, Vayomer Haman l'melech Achashverosh. Haman is telling Achashverosh, Yesh noi am echad, mefuzer mufayer ad ben ha'amim, b'chol medinos malchusecha. There is one nation that spread out in among all the countries, all your countries, but with the same shoynis mikol am, they're different than every other nation. V'esdasi ha'melech enam oisim, they don't listen to the decrees of the king. V'lamelech ein shevet la'anicham. There is no use for them, for you, to leave them. Now the Gemara says that there was no one who knew how to tell Lashon Hara like better than Haman. What's actually happening over here, Haman is telling Achashverosh to kill the Jews. Now, Achashverosh is on the same team as Haman. They both hate the Jews and they both want to kill them. However, Achashverosh is telling Haman, listen, I hate the Jews just as much as you do, but I know exactly what happened to the previous kings who tried to kill out the Jews. Nebuchadnezzar, the king of Babel, and Belshazzar, which was also the king of Babel, they all died trying to kill the Jews, and I'm terrified. I'm scared of killing the Jews, even though I hate them. So now, in this pasuk, Haman is actually convincing Achashverosh to go ahead and kill the Jews, and there's nothing to worry about. When he's telling him, Yeshnoi, is what Haman is actually telling Achashverosh, Yeshanu min ha-mitzvahs. They're actually sleeping from the mitzvahs. They are not as observant as they should be. And you might say, oh, okay, maybe the Hamoinam, the nation itself, the people themselves are sleeping, but the heads of the people, the rabbis, the Sanhedrin, they are still observant. Says Haman, Am Echad. They are one nation. Wherever the head is, that's where the tail is. They're all in it together. And if you know that they're not listening, as we saw previously in the Mishnah, Achashverosh went to great lengths to try to cause the Bnei Israel to sin. If you see that they're actually sinning, then that means that the whole Am, since they're all one nation, they're all sinning. Mefuzer mefered ben Am. I mean, if you might say that if I kill all of them, then there might be a rebellion, that, you know, people are going to be very upset about killing out all the Jews. They're spread out among all your countries, all the provinces in your control, and therefore you have nothing to worry about. B'chol medinos malchusecha. Haman is pointing out to Achashverosh over here that this is the first time in history of the Jewish people that they were under the rulership of one king. The Gemara says that HaKadosh Baruch Hu made sure that even if one king wants to kill the Jews, there will still be Jews in a different country under another king who will stay alive. And so throughout history, the Jews were always spread out under the rulership of different kings. This is the first time in history that the Jews are all under one rulership of one king. And it's as if it was carved out exactly if that country was under the rulership of Achashverosh, then it had Jews in it. If it was not under the control of Achashverosh, there were no Jews in it. And even though, when the Megillah opens up, this is after Achashverosh lost the war and he lost 100 countries, he was still very happy because Haman pointed out to him that all the countries that were under his control had Jews in them. And there was not one Jew that was not under his control. So he's telling him, this must be a siman from Hashem that he doesn't care if you kill out the Jews. So we see that Haman was very convincing to Achashverosh, and he's addressing his core concern of killing out the Jews. And as we're going to see, Achashverosh is convinced. Pasuk Tes, Yimal Melech Toiv, Yikosev La'avdom, it should be written to kill them out. There's a story that's told about Reb Chaim Volozhin that on Purim one year, an ani, a poor person, came to him and told him, listen, if you give me some money, I'll tell you a good word. So Reb Chaim says, okay, why not? He gives this poor person some money. And this poor person tells him, it says in the Megillah, Yikosev la'abdom. So what it really means is, la'abdom is made of the letters loy bedam, not with blood. So this decree in Shemayim was not written in blood. Therefore, it was later on, it was cancelled. And that's what this pasuk is referring to. So Rabbi Chaim enjoyed the word, and he went to his Rebbe, the Gra, and told him this word. And the Gra told him, you know that this person that you gave money to was really Eliyahu HaNavi. He came to me previously, and he's the one who told me this pshat. So apparently this pshat is from Eliyahu HaNavi himself. That's the story that's told. Now over here, Haman is convincing Achashverosh, not only does he not have anything to worry about mitzad Hashem trying to punish Achashverosh, but in addition, I'm going to give you 10,000 talents of silver. Now those days, silver was the value of silver was by its weight. Now each talent is about 50 pounds, which is quite a lot of silver. Mm-hmm. So Haman was, as we mentioned, very, very wealthy. And he's trying to convince Achashverosh by giving him all this money to kill out the Jews. The Gemara says that the Achashverosh's response was, what are you, crazy? You want to give me money? I'm very happy to kill out the Jews. And the Gemara says, Mashal ma davar doim. The Gemara gives an analogy to what was happening over here to two people. Each one of them has a field. One of them has a ditch, a big ditch in his field. Another one has a big pile of rubble. And the person with the ditch comes over to the person with the pile of dirt and tells him, I'm going to pay you to take this dirt and fill up my ditch so I can actually plant my field. And the other person replies, you want to pay me? I will give you gladly all this dirt and you can use it to fill in your ditch. You have nothing to worry about. This was the same thing. Haman wants to pay Achashverosh to kill out the Jews. Achashverosh is telling him, you don't have to pay me, and I'm going to kill out the Jews gladly. Pasuk Yod, V'yasar melech estabatoi mel yodoi, V'yitna lohaman ben amdasa ha-gogi tzoyer ha-yehudim. Achashverosh takes off his ring, and he gives it to Haman tzoyer ha-yehudim. This is actually the power of signature. This was a very big move on Achashverosh's part, and the Gemara says that Gdeil Asaras Tabas Yoser Mirbayim Vishmana Nevim Venevi Shehoi LeIsrael. The taking off the ring did more to the Jewish people than the 48 prophets that the Jews had. This is the first time that the Jews realized that there is a serious decree against them, and all the prophets who tried to bring them back on the right path did not manage to be as effective as Haman was with convincing Achashverosh to kill them. This is like we said, as you know, Achashverosh is telling Haman, you don't have to pay me. The Gemara uses that analogy to explain it, and you could go ahead and kill out the Jews as you wish. All the scribes of the king are being called to write out this decree. All the scribes, they had a whole system of, they had like the head scribes who would read out to all the scribes that were under them. They would read out in all the different languages of all the countries under the rulership of Achashverosh. Pasuk Yud-Gimel, V'nishlach Sfarim B'yad Haratzim, Makom Medinas HaMelech, L'Hashmid L'Ara Yigul Abed Eskol Yehudim, Minar V'ad Zogin Taf Anashim, B'yoyim Echad B'Shleshasar L'Chodesh Nemasar U'Chodesh Ador U'Shlolom L'Voiz. This edict read that all the Jews must be killed on the 13th of Adar, and all the booty that people will collect will belong to them. This was another incentive to kill the Jews. To make sure, you know, it's a very easy way of getting rich. The Jews were obviously very wealthy, and all the people who would kill the Jews would be able to take the riches to themselves. Now that was actually something new that the king, that Achashverosh did, because until then, all the riches, that all the spoils of war, whatever it was, would belong to the king. This is actually the first time that Achashverosh is telling them they can keep it to themselves. And now when this edict went out to all the nations, all the countries under the control of Ahasuerus, it read that Ahasuerus is telling all the people, I want you to know that I have a very, very esteemed advisor by the name of Haman, and he advised me to kill out all the Jews in all of my countries, and we are very happy to do so. I'm eating and drinking, and Haman is eating and drinking with me. And at the end of this edict, Ahasuerus was telling a very important line, that any country, any city, any family who would keep the Jews alive would be killed, would be eliminated. And so if there were any Jews who would go over to their neighbor and say, can you please take me in as a slave, I'll work for you forever, just don't kill me, that family would tell them, are you crazy? We don't want to be killed by Ahasuerus. If we are found with you in our house, then we will be killed. And this was another incentive to make sure that there will not be one Jew alive in all of the countries of Ahasuerus. Pasuk Yud Dalet, Pashegan Aksab Leinos and Das Pachol Medino Medino, Goli L'cholam, Lir Asidim Leim Azeh. He's telling all the people to be ready for this day and make sure that they kill out all the Jews. רוצים יוצא דחופים בדבר המלך ודוס ניסנו בשושן הבירו במלך ואומן יושב לישטויס ואיר שושן נוויכם. All these messengers went out to deliver this message, and all the people, this decree was set in Shushan HaBira, and Haman and Ahasuerus are sitting down to drink. Now, as we mentioned before, this is, again, part of the Nais. And if you would wonder, why is it that when these people in this country would not kill the Jews immediately? Obviously, Ahasuerus does not worry about the Jews. He doesn't care if they're all killed out. So why, I'm sure you would have in every country a few anti-Semites who would say, why wait 11 months until after to kill the Jews? Why don't we get a head start and start killing the Jews right away? But this, again, was part of the Nais. When Ahasuerus sent out the decree many years earlier about every person being in charge in his house, again, through the advice of Haman, all the people said, this king is crazy. He's not with the program. Obviously, every man is the one in charge in his house, and he's the one to set the tone. Why is Ahasuerus going ahead and telling us that the men have to be in charge? And so, many years later, when this decree is sent out, the people in the kingdom of Ahasuerus said, you know, maybe the king will change his mind later. Well, obviously, we know that he's not 100%, he's not with it, as we saw from the previous decree that he sent out. And therefore, all the anti-Semites under the control of Ahasuerus refrained from killing the Jews because they didn't know if this edict was serious or not. And again, this was part of the Nais to make sure that the Jews will be saved at the end of the day. Okay, we'll stop here and then the pasuk again.